beautiful band.
I'm either going to be completely lame or in absolute rare form. So let's do this shit.
Well, both. Actually, if you were lame, that'd be pretty rare.
I'm at rare form in a good way. All right. What is up, my brother from another mother?
I love the t-shirt, man.
That's right. Daddy's a chef.
Let me make sure we're actually live, and then we'll start. All right.
So
I gotta start. Yep. Just because I don't want to forget to say anything. We have two people watching. Hi, two people watching. Say hi.
Nice.
Excellent.
So
Jeremy and the editor's wife.
Probably.
Numbers
2000% increase.
Numbers are numbers. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent. That includes Justin's political and religious exploits. But most important,
already.
Most importantly, this is a CYA right here. I got to cover my ass because I'm gonna probably say a lot of things that are wrong. I don't have that much knowledge on season two. Like I want to have a conversation with the editor about his edit, and I wish I was coming from a more educated place from watching season two. And I've been trying to catch up. I've been just mainlining the edit, and I've had episode two on in the background. I haven't been able to sit down and watch season two.
Yeah.
On Amazon, but it's been on. But you know what? If people come to Thank the Light for one thing, it's for hard hitting gotcha journalism. So
actually that probably
incorrect,
works okay
because... uninformed, incorrect gotcha
journalism. But actually, you know what? That's not such a bad thing because in the end, what happens is you can only reflect on the edit that you watched. So without comparison to things that were cut, you can give an honest opinion on whether the story makes sense, whether you could follow the logic, etc. Even better than if you had hidden knowledge of scenes that were in that you kind of fill the gaps with.
Well, because that's what I'm wondering if I love the season one edit so much because I know season one so well. And I just, I can in my mind go, oh, he cut that out, but that's fine. But then season two, I'm like, oh, I think he cut something out there. And I'd like to see it. I don't know if it's necessary, but I'd like to see it. So, you know, and I don't know. Yeah. And we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. And you can either, you know, remind me why I'm wrong or why. And you getting it down to 4.5 hours is no, you know, I mean,
it was quite a thought.
I feel like that was easier second season than first season because I feel like there was much more like extraneous stuff that you can just fucking. And like what Dez or like what you were saying, I feel that I've got a little distance from the books. Let's just say this. You did everything you could with season two. It was a very disjointed story. And I realized watching it, you were able to put a lot of things together. And I feel like it gives I think I said this last week too, but it really gives the sense of all these things are happening like simultaneously in different parts of the world. And I think that the way that it's put together in the episodes, it's, you know, you can tell that they're, you know, kind of similar, but I don't know if it really conveys the like urgency of all this is happening and culminating together, right?
Exactly. So thanks very much for that. I think that's one of the main things that I noticed about season two versus season one. Season one is relatively linear in the sense that the party stays together through the first two episodes. They then get split up at Shadow Logoth. But then still the three parties sort of run in parallel very linearly and meet up in episode five in Tarvalon again, right? When Moraine and eventually episode six, and then they, you know, the last three episodes, they're all together again. So it's very linear. Season two, everyone's on their own story. Then it's not just that they are trying to meet up again after getting split. They actually are on their own story. Parents after the horn.
Yeah, they think Rand's dead for most of the time, so they're doing their own shit. So
exactly. And so trying to weave the narrative together is a lot more, let's say, it's a lot more of an interesting puzzle and a lot more of an interesting challenge. And I think, Fatty, one thing that you mentioned now that really struck me when I was doing the edit is you said about it being episodic, yeah? And one of the things that really, really stands out in season two versus season one is that every episode is exactly whatever it was, 50 minutes, 55 minutes with credits and so on and so forth. And within each and every episode, we have to touch base with each and every of these storylines, right? The A plot, the B plot, C plot, and D plot. And what happens, as I noticed through the edit, because of the way, you know, storytelling works, right? Beginning, middle, end, right? Setup, challenge, and then payoff, right? Every arc, every character goes through three beats in each episode. And I'll use Perrin as an example, right? They set off for the horn, then they have to stop when they meet Elias and they see these dead people. Then they stop to bury them, and then they go to the next farmhouse where they find the Fade, and Perrin has his vision with the flies and so on, right? So four beats, right? And each time there's an episode, you need to have three or four beats. You arrive at a location, first beat, cut away to the next plot, come back, second beat.
Well, we go through all of their first beats.
Exactly. And then we go through all of the second beats, and then we go through all of the third beats. So they arrive at the 2-1s mall, for example. That's the first beat. The second beat is the Sean Chan attack at night where they grab them. The third beat is when the lady comes out of the temple and they kill Uno at the end of the episode. Yeah. So every plot point in every episode has exactly three beats. Arrive, something happens, conclusion, and setup for the next episode. And what this creates is a very artificial pacing for each of the narrative arcs of each of the journeys of the people. And it, although they've allocated extra 10 minutes per episode for the season, so there's an extra hour or more of the whole season, it doesn't progress very quickly. And this constraint of trying to fit an hour in and three beats per narrative storyline, you really feel them pushing. The writing is really pushing up against these boundaries. They're really in a box to keep the episode to a certain length and to pad it out in some cases and to shorten it in other cases. When you cut it into a movie, you really break down the barriers between episodes. So you're not constrained to three beats per location and then move to the next location and have three beats over there, right? So what I ended up doing
and
is...
You mean, when you say location, you mean also like...
Like a 2-1's mall.
Like story beats, location, exactly. Like exactly. Perrin, Matt.
There's three beats in the 2-1's mall, for example. There's three beats with Elias in the beginning. There's probably more than three beats with Rand and Kari and with the asylum and the asylum worker and so on. But roughly speaking, three beats per episode for each and every mini arc that each character goes through. When you kind of cut it into a movie, you just simply break down all those barriers. You're no longer constrained to an hour episode. You're no longer constrained to three beats. You can tell that person's story across all the arcs, across all the episodes that they contain in. And so, for example, with Perrin's story, what I ended up doing is cutting through the meeting with Elias into the next scene into the village with the flies and immediately straight into a 2-1's mall. I don't need to pause for a beat, right? So I can bring later scenes and merge them into current scenes to give the story more momentum, number one. Number two, I can then also cut people's sequences out of order, right? I don't need to give, like you said, there's each person has the establishing shot first, and then each person has the complicating shot second, and then each person has the resolution shot third. I can put situation, complication, resolution as a mini arc together, move to the next character, do a mini arc for them, move to the next character, come back later, etc. So A, being able to do things out of order, B, being able to merge a lot of the scenes and cut the in-between stuff, and C, just simply being able to accelerate certain people's timelines, pause other people's timelines, and move things around. I believe it creates a lot more pacing, and it keeps your understanding of where the characters are, and everyone's on their own journey, but they all feel like it's all happening in parallel. It keeps that much more
strong. Exactly. I feel like that was one of the biggest things I noticed. It's like every time we switch something, I still got the vibe that it was all happening. Like, this is happening when that last scene just happened. Like, and that's one of the things that the episodic things take away from. And you cut Elias down quite a bit, right?
Yeah. So I cut quite a lot of characters down, a lot, if you notice.
Trust me, I have notes. That's one of the things I was going to say. Desmond, don't worry, man. I have a lot of notes. So full disclosure, I just, like, Des sent the link to me, and it was the scene with Mogadin
and Lanfear
I was watching. I had some problems trying to finish it. I kept, there's some shit going on. I kept going back. And then the thing that you shared it on was, like, timed me out last night. It's like, you have to wait 3 hours. I'm like, well, I gotta go to fucking bed. And so I got home, and then I was doing some shit. So I do have some questions and some stuff. One of the things that, like, when I say you did all you can, I think that it also had to be infinitely harder for me, even though you had much more extraneous shit that was probably in its own way easier to cut out. I feel like it's also infinitely harder to smash the stuff together and make it cohesive. Yeah. Like, yeah. You don't get any kind of resolution on many things. And you were able to, just quick examples. Sorry, before I go off, you put the wolf subtitles in, right?
In season like one?
Run Brother. Yeah, in Run Brother, yes. And that shit.
Yes.
That's fucking so awesome. That's still one of my favorite. Like, it's a small detail and it just,
yeah. Just goes to show that parents starting to understand what they're trying to say. It's like a little touch.
It's just one of those little things.
Exactly.
Happy to know you, man. I love it. But like Loyal lives from the dagger. We get nothing. Like literally fucking nothing. You know, I have seen a few things where it's obvious that people are kind of making excuses. They're like, oh, Uno got stabbed by a Madral. Well, okay, did he get, you know, healed by an Aes Sedai then? Because that would fuck you up too.
By the way, this is going to blow your mind. That's not Uno on screen. That's another blonde Shinaran that looks almost exactly like the actor. Uno's in the background. It's right. Mind-boggling how you would cast people that look...
Why would you do that? Unless you just are trying... Yeah. I've said this a couple times. Rafe is a little too clever for his own fucking good, but that would definitely be an example. Yeah. But that was
everyone,
one of the
everyone,
things...
Everyone stop. Everyone stop.
Yeah.
What? There's season two one? There's two eye no. patches?
No, he doesn't have an eye patch.
Okay. He doesn't have an eye patch. He's just kind of like laying face away from the screen.
He's laying face down. Okay. He's got blonde hair. He looks like... what's his name? Guy something like that.
Guy Roberts. Whoa. He's still not going to come
out. He's lying down. He's clutching his arm like that. That's not Uno. Uno's behind him in the background, slightly blurred.
Okay.
One day I'll go back and do a master edit again of all the seasons. I will take out the part of Loyal being stabbed and all that because it's got no consequence on
season Let me two. Get in your head. Let me get in your head about this. Just, you're talking about the three beats. What? You could almost do, and I don't know how you would do it. This would probably, you'd have to storyboard it out big time before you even imported your video. But do three 90-minute movies per season. And you could still, you wouldn't even have to like stop it, credits, start the next movie.
Yeah.
But just in your head, do like, you know, a new Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. All the whole season. Yeah. So you'd still kind of have your beats and resolution and take a deep breath. And then I don't know. I'm sure it's a lot easier to say than do, but it might give that because there's a reason why people write and produce in those three beats. You know, it's kind of the whole hero's journey situation.
There's definitely a natural two-part split to each of the two seasons. I have to think about a three-part split, but the two-part split is relatively clear. So in the first season, it is until the point where they join to Loghain. That's exactly the halfway point because in the second half, starts 1 month later. And in the second season, it's the part where Moraine jumps in and kills Lanfear and they start to escape, which is, again, the midpoint of the season. Now, to do it in three arcs, you just have to think carefully. As you say, set up, you know, resolution, setup, complication, and resolution. Probably the first season could split at Shadow Logoth as the first part, and then at Tarvalon in the second part, and then going off to Faldara and the Eye in the third part. Yeah. Second season, I need to think a bit about it because of those branching storylines. It's a bit more complicated.
Yeah.
Well, a couple other things I feel like, and like I'm, this is where I'm a little bit like Dez is in the how much did you cut down, if any? Because I'm like Dez, not quite as familiar with the second season, but Loyal lives. You know, like it seems like you kind of just cut a few, like you cut the Dark Friend Social out and the fact that Ishii's already with the Xian Chen. And it's like, well, why is he there? Well, you don't really get any hints at all. It's just why is he there? And I think that's better than dropping a few things that are confusing. And so those were the things that I noticed. Like,
by the way, that's not in the season either, right? Because he's just with the Xian Chen in the season.
Yeah. And they don't really give a lot of hints.
Yeah. You also don't need it, right? You can just assume he's scheming and he's doing things.
Yeah.
It's a fair
one. This is a question as well as, like, did you cut this down at all to make it more poignant? Because I don't think you did, but maybe a few little things. Mm-hmm. When Moraine's taken off and the faceless, how do you say it? Madral. Fade. I like Madral better, but, you know, Fade is, Madral just sounds cool, but I'm always afraid I'm going to say it wrong, right? Like, oh, look at this hick in Spokane. He says it's stupid.
Suan.
Sweet. but who sends them? That's like I said, did you cut it down at all? And also, what's your idea of who sent them? Is just the dark or what?
So this might lead into, I was just ready to ask this, and this might, I think this is going to lead into the same answer. What's his name? I can't think of his name right now. The dark leader. When Ishii is talking to the Shan Chan, they keep saying our master. I don't get the sense that the Shan Chan are being led by the dark one, though, are they?
Not that they know of.
They keep saying our master. When they're talking to each other, they keep talking about someone who is giving them equal orders. I don't know.
So if you're talking about the scene between Leandrin and
I think he's talking about this Shan Chan.
It happens twice. I think it happens. It does happen when Leandrin brings the girls to Surah.
Yeah.
But I swear it happens when there aren't any. Oh no, it does say Aes Sedai and Shan Chan. Okay. So, but either way, is she talking to? She's not talking to Shan Chan, which she's talking about our master.
No, she's talking to Surath, I think, directly, right?
Leandrin and Surath are both talking about Ishamael when they refer to our master. Okay. At that point.
But Surath is not. He's Shan Chan, right?
Surath is Shan Chan.
Surath is. Yeah.
So I don't sense that the Shan Chan are being ordered by the same leader that the Dark Aes Sedai are.
So Leandrin is definitely being ordered by Ishamael to start with, but then I think Lanfear intercepts, right? At some point.
Yes. But the Shan Chan aren't being led by the Ishamael.
Yeah, they're being manipulated by Ishamael.
Manipulated. They wouldn't admit that he's our master. If he's trying to manipulate them,
they would definitely bow their heads, right? They're not gonna.
But that was a conversation just between him and Surath, correct? There was nobody else around, was there? I guess Leandrin says it. With
need to rewatch it.
Around, so.
Need to rewatch it.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. So I totally threw us off track. I thought those two answers were going to intersect, and I'll have to do more research. So Fatty, what was your question again?
Did you accentuate the stuff in Telen Riad, like as far as like the kind of like
no,
I don't know, like not this psychedelicness time. That
no,
that
no, was, I that didn't
was completely done by them. Okay, because I know you did that first season, right?
Like you kind of did in like, the first season because the first season was maybe they didn't have all the effects, the VFX and so on. So I did that whole blurry motion thing.
Yeah, but exactly. One, which is kind of what they did in season two. That's why I'm asking. Like, exactly. Did you do that? Because maybe they took their clue from you. I don't know. Maybe they owe some money. Is all I'm saying. Just give me a little bit.
Well, all I remember is that in the season one episode 8 finale, in the dream sequence where Rand is in that dream thing where he thinks he sees Egwene and Ishamael showing him this picture of this life together and so on, I very deliberately made discontinuous cuts so that the scenes, like he's exiting the door, but the next scene's immediately outside the hut next to Egwene and so on. And what I noticed in season two, especially when Ishamael was, trying to do these dream visions with Min and with others, a lot of discontinuities that they cut into the shots. And I was like, I've seen this before.
No good. I mean, this is probably the most biggest complaint I have. And I'm like, I need you to take me seriously. Look at my face. Why did you cut Lan peeing?
Best scene of the show, right? Lan peeing and Alana watching him from around the side.
I mean, that is Jeremy fucking to a T. Have you heard the episode where he literally pees and we're like, dude, I'm guessing you don't listen to us all the time. There's an episode where we're talking about stuff. Jeremy's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. But he doesn't turn his mic up and it's just like.
And it's his headphone. It's his headphone.
Oh my word.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good.
Wasn't that from Naked Gun?
Yes.
Jeremy, fucking plagiarist. Jeez. Thought he had an original idea.
So now I was kind of trying to think about what I wanted to email you. And when I finally emailed you, it was when I was reminded how much more Min there is in the Amazon version.
Oh yeah,
and Min I can see
exist in your cut.
It has all the Min, and the edit has none of the Min.
I understand why she doesn't serve the end of season two, but she's gonna be a big part. So I would think that you'd want to kind of ease her into the story. So
cut out a big part of the Min and Matt stuff. Does that even you cut that completely?
Not totally.
I had parts where I had to skip like five, six minutes at a time.
There is no meaning in the season two of Fan Edit at all.
Do Matt you see isn't Matt in the White tower with Leandrin just the one time,
Matt,
right? Matt?
No, you don't. Matt is not in the tower in season two.
I was going to say, we never see Matt in the tower. He just pops up in
You see Matt for the first time in the Fan Edit at the 3.5 hour mark. In Kyrian, when Van stumbles at him,
he was not enough show. Matt. Well, yeah, there was not Matt.
But that, that was what I was saying.
I was thinking about it. I was like, I can't remember. And like I said, I had to skip like 3 or 4 minutes at a time because it would freeze and just do the death roll, and I'd have to skip ahead.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that's why I have some kind of weird. Like, did this happen? But I was like, I don't remember any of that. And there's is Min not on screen for even 1 minute, right?
No, no, Min's completely out of the season.
And there's been like fuck Min.
No, it's look. It's a matter of you gotta work
it's
backwards.
It's not important for this part of the story, you know.
It's, yeah,
and you know what?
It's not important for, I mean, there's a few things going on, right? Like Min is functionally speaking a dark friend, right? She's doing something for the dark.
Yeah, whether she's doing convinced her
that
she's...
she needs to do it. It's the Inktar storyline. Right? Just one more favor. Just one more favor.
You got that out too. No Inktar death. Thank God.
No Inktar's dead. Yes, no, heroic
death. But did you show the thing where he's like, oh, Shinawa?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, that must have been one of the parts where I had to skip forward then, fuck. Because that shit's dumb. Yeah. But, I mean, you had to
There's a lot of sort of back and forth about this because Min is functionally not necessary for the finale. And you've got to, if you're cutting a movie, you've got to work backwards from there, right? From the finale and work backwards to what's gonna mean, you know, what's going to convey the most meaning. Matt in the tower suffering under Leandrin. Not really necessary. We can catch up with him in Kyrian and you know, pick up the story from there through Rand's eyes.
Nynaeve and Leandrin are more important as far as that part of the story goes, right there.
Exactly.
So.
So there's a lot basically to take out from that part of the story and not affect the movie as a movie. And again, I'm not trying to recreate the TV show a condensed amount of time. I'm trying to make a functional movie that has its own three-act structure, has its own finale that stands on its own, right? So having Min there is a character that you don't need in the story, so cut it out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it totally it makes sense as season two in a standalone, but again, if she shows up at the beginning of season three and like her visions are the reason something happens.
I don't think anything related to season two is gonna have a bearing on her plot in season three.
And I feel like honestly, even like people will be mad at me for this, but even in the books, she is a she's a fun character, but she's not necessarily a necessary character. I can't think of one thing that wouldn't, like, she's fun for foreshadowing and for people trying to, like, read what they can do, but
it's important to Rand's arc and his mental state, but that comes later.
Right, the one thing is when the shit happens with Simmeridge and, you know, he does what he does, and that is the biggest reason for her to be in the entire series, in my opinion. If she was not there or a different person, it would matter as much.
Do you know who she is?
No reason to have her.
Do you know who Min is?
Mm-hmm.
She's Indiana Jones.
Do explain.
Please.
If you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, if Indiana Jones never shows up, the exact same things happens. The Nazis still open the Ark. The Nazis still get their faces melted off. And the government still fine in Temple of Doom.
Fair enough.
The kid.
Okay, one for one so far.
This is mind-blowing. 1,000.
Min,
I've never heard this. Please continue.
Just
same thing as far as Temple of Doom.
Same,
really?
Same, I think pretty much. I think if
he would have fucked up Kalima's temple and the water would have came out all crazy, that would have happened still.
Because it's actually Short Round is actually the catalyst who get the kids to fight back.
But Indiana Short Jones, Round wouldn't have been there without Indiana Jones.
You're right. He's the chauffeur. He's the chauffeur in Temple of Doom.
This is mind-blowing stuff.
Your theory sucks ass. No, just kidding.
It how holds about as down? Much water as the Wheel of Prime.
Is Jeremy here? What? Did Jeremy show up? What's happening? What's happening? Is he here? Secrets.
He's not watching anymore.
I want to just see him pop up in your screen one day, just like, hello, like at your house. That'd be guest spot. Let's get a cutout of him and you can just put it in there and we can make and we'll make him have to come back out on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. You keep
how much did you cut down the Loghain Moraine land? Like when he's, because I know you definitely made a few things around it, but did you leave it pretty much intact?
Yeah, so let's talk the Moraine Land storyline into Loghain. So I think widely acknowledged as, let's say, the weakest of all the story arcs in the season. And this is not me saying it. This is every review I've watched on YouTube from prominent, you know, Wheel of Time creators and so on. That the whole angst and the way it is written and the length that it's dragged out for over the course of the season and the pacing of it drags the season down, right? So what I try to do as much as possible while keeping Moraine stilled, yeah, as part of a season arc, try to reduce all of the sort of long, dreary dialogue scenes about what she's going through, how she's feeling, et cetera, et cetera. Because in the end, again,
coming back around. You got all the fast stuff, all that shit. Good job. Yeah. I mean, that's so annoying.
So a lot of the sort of water conversations, a lot of the Alana family farm, all of those things.
Gone. Right?
What really matters is that Moraine and Lan need a reason to go their separate ways, right? Which comes down to the letter. Right, the letter that she gets from Baldoman, the poem.
Right, the poem or whatever.
She needs to acknowledge her mistake, and she needs to decide on her own that she needs to go find Rand in Cairhien, and that she's going to send Lan away. So that's an important first half of that arc, right? And that I established through, you know, the various shots of her getting the letter, reading the letter, Verin interjecting to say they will accompany her to Tarvalon, and then their big conversation, Moraine and Lan's conversation, the one evening. When she basically calls Alana to kind of take Lan away. By the way, I did add one line of dialogue using some AI tool.
Ooh.
Yes, I had to basically engineer a single line that's where Moraine tells Lan, I need to go find Rand in Cairhien. Yeah. Because I didn't have like the line doesn't exist. And so I inserted that. You will notice it if you're paying attention closely to the tone of voice. But here's what I found, because I've watched lots of Star Wars edits and you know, other things that other fan editors make.
Because I noticed some stuff I didn't notice.
Your brain is very, very good at not noticing it if you're not looking for it. You just assume the person's actually speaking normally. But if you listen closely, it is slightly more robotic with a slightly metallic ring to the
tinge, like a little bit C-3PO-ish.
A little bit C-3PO-ish, and also the tone sometimes, or the pacing, the cadence doesn't match necessarily with what was said in the previous words, you know?
Where she's literally telling him to go away because
I may
know what you're talking about. Because there was one thing I was like,
the line says something like, we need to find him in Cairhien, something like that. And you can tell if you listen.
And it was Lan that you had said, right?
No. Moraine says it. Her Moraine back is towards him, so you don't see her mouth movement. There's a really nice long gap of blank dead air time, so I can insert
so
that line.
Jab it in there
and Lan's reaction to that line is appropriate as well.
Because she's. I think I remember it. It didn't pick up on it right away. Because
I was like, I don't remember that. I didn't think that you inserted. Yeah. I was just like, oh wow. There was a few things that I was like, oh man, I don't remember him saying that. That's cool.
Because her line to him was Rand's alive, right? And then I added the thing. I need to find him in Cairhien. And then Lan's reaction is appropriately shocked to say, no, it can't be type of thing. Yeah?
Because there's not a lot of dialogue in this show where they don't focus on the speaker.
Yeah.
So you need to find
a reverse shot. And there was a beautiful a continuous shot. I didn't need to cut anything in. There was just a shot over her shoulder.
I don't remember that. But there was another thing with Matt saying something. And I was like, man, I don't remember that. That's kind of cool. But
no, if anything else, there's only one line I put in. So anything else was actually there.
But that shit makes stuff hit, you know?
Yeah. Little things just enough to understand why she's going to Cairhien and why he's going with Alana. Yeah, you just needed enough because I cut out a lot in between of her going to her sister and all of that stuff, right? So I needed the audience to know that she's going after Rand in Cairhien. And so I had to put that line in. Talking about things cut out, I cut out her sister completely. Again.
Yes.
And her nephew, right? Because again,
that we're not going to miss.
No, because the actress isn't in season 3, so that storyline is not coming back.
Okay.
Right.
What's her name? Coming back. Sorry.
I mean, Moraine's sister, right? She's not in season 3. By the time we pick this up again, whether it's season 4, whether it's later seasons, there will need to be some reintroduction of the dynamics and so on. And you will catch up again, you know? You're not going to miss it by not having it here. And again, what matters to the finale, right? Moraine is after Rand. Moraine having politics with her own sister and blah, 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 completely irrelevant to that, right? So rather focus on her finding Rand in the most clever and efficient way possible than chasing around after her sister and trying to play politics and play nice. Yeah?
Well, I think what...
Why do you think they put that stuff in lieu of other things? Like, what...
The most practical answer, Rosamund Pike is the star of the show. Book two doesn't have Moraine in it very much. She's at the beginning and right at the very end. And they needed to create a storyline for her. Unfortunately, my opinion, one of the most boring like things you could have done with it, right? And to put Moraine on that storyline and to put Lan on that storyline with Alana, just endless hours of boring dialogue. Endless hours and melodrama rather than actual drama, right? Like this is Moraine, the side quest.
Wasted time. We could have had more math.
It's a lot of dead air time because you didn't have to write it in this way that she spent this much time trying to find Rand in Kyrian by going through her sister. You didn't have to write it in this way that her sister has such a prominent role and so on. There are other things you could have done. You could have in whatever way.
What about a boat with Bail Doman? Like, okay, it's not in the book, but at least it's someone.
I just realized that you have a giant picture of Jeremy Bailey.
I mean, there's a lot you could do that doesn't involve, you know, random family politics and so on. And it's not that it's not necessarily well written. It's just that it feels superfluous. And
so
if you're cutting a movie, you cut those things out. Right?
It's again,
like an E plot or an F plot.
It's like they felt like they had to have some sort of noble presence in lieu of Barthonis's manor in the Great, you know, from the Great Hunt and stuff. So it's like, don't necessarily, it's like, oh, we'll give this to the fans. It's like, no one gives a shit about this. Like, if it's not Barthonis's manor, do stuff that matters on screen. That would be much better.
Yeah.
So, I apologize. This is me not remembering season two very well. But I feel like the nephew is going to come back. Though.
No.
I mean, he's in jail, right? So
he's dead.
In what way is he going to come back?
You're going to find him nailed to the wall.
His aunt gives him up at the end of that arc, right? His aunt gives him up and the guards come and arrest him. So,
but that's going to make him want revenge.
Sure.
That dude's not going to leave that cell alive, let me tell you. He's not important enough.
Oh. See, this is what, but I don't care if Rafe adds shit if he has a plan. Like, I do care, but if you're going to matter how half-baked and stupid your plan is, like to throw in a B plot, a C plot, and literally just have it burn out. Like, it's really
important. Well, and that's why, like, the things that you cut out, I think were just perfect. And like some of the things that, like, it's like I kind of wish you certain things, like you kind of minimized it. I think you're able to minimize it, but like the Cole, like kind of like half-ass, like, is Ishmael in love with Lucerne as well? Was there some weird like love triangle between him and Lanfear, and like the way he acts towards Perrin? It's just like, is Ishi just creepy? Like, you know, they really kind of accentuate that stuff, but why? And I, like I said, you were able to minimize it with some of the things, just little things. I think probably one line here and there and stuff.
One of the ways in visual media that you can portray someone being creepy is that they get really up close in your personal space. And so as a TV show, they have decided that Ishmael is going to be that guy that gets all creepy and up in people's personal space, right?
Yeah,
okay. It's That's a fair. Choice. It's not one I would have gone for. I don't particularly find it very menacing. Ishii is the type of evil that would strike fear into my heart, right?
No.
I don't care that he's all up in Perrin's face, brushing his face. I actually want him to, like, threaten the guy with...
Yeah, I'm not creeped out. I have a boner. What's going on?
Some visions or
Perrin
some
magic. Definitely had a boner. I could see it.
Yeah.
It was a wolf boner.
It's like, a fear boner.
I don't find him creepy at all. Like,
no.
He's creepy.
Creepy, like a rapist.
He's creepy, not like a villain. Not like a villain, right? I don't feel the threat of my life. I feel the threat of assault, which, come on, for the Forsaken, who gives a crap, right? Like I want to feel endangered of my own life. Not that I'm going to do something.
He gives you that fucking, like, I'm scared that I'm alone in the shower feeling in prison type of thing.
I like it. I like the, like, just this.
Of course you do, weirdo.
To me, it's just that, like, I will invade everyone's personal space. No one knows who I am. No one knows where I came from.
Yeah.
I may as well be fog, and I am covering you like a mist. And just like,
I'll tell you who doesn't like it. That guy behind you.
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't. He's doing his best Angry Guy Roberts impersonation. Where'd you get that picture?
He sent me what I was going to make when I was doing a failed attempt at making a logo with our faces on it. And he actually sent me three pictures with a nice smile, and then he sent me this prison shot. So, of course,
I hate the Wheel of Time. Fuck you, Rafe Judskins. Is that,
hey, everybody out there, this guy will be on next week. You want to tune in next week.
I can't wait. He better not fucking find an excuse to bag out. You hear me, fucker?
Dude, it's gonna be like a morning zoo, and we're just gonna call him and prank him for the whole episode if he doesn't show up. I don't want to get too. I was almost gonna start talking about episode or season three, but that's what all next week is gonna be about. Season three.
Yeah, all next week.
I'm gonna try to watch. I've been getting pings. I've been getting updates from YouTube there of all the new videos that have been coming on. And I like the I like the characters talking about, like, you know, this is what my character was doing last season.
I haven't watched any of the interviews. I want to try and keep that back a little bit.
Yeah, are you gonna watch it before season three, or are you gonna watch it right before season three?
No. Have you signed up for
any of the interviews? Like, if you not even
haven't watched any of the interviews. I've watched the opening 11 minutes.
Did you see the thing where Matt does the interview at, or Donald Finn does the interview as Matt?
No, I haven't. Heard about it.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I'll at some point watch it. Have you guys signed up for the Amazon worldwide premiere next week?
No.
Right. So get on Google, find it. I hope the link is still available. They're going to premiere episode 1 next week, March the 8th, which I think is a Saturday. I'm not sure. And then it officially launches March the 13th. But I mean, yes, you know, get on it 1 week early. Why not?
Well, that'd be good for us, because we're going to try to do a long show with the first three episodes. So if we can watch one a couple days ahead of time, that'd be helpful.
That would help us a ton.
Oh, God. I'm actually so excited for it. I mean, I got a few things that are more questions, because we haven't discussed the second season with him. I think a couple of them. There's a couple more questions about stuff that you've edited out. But Des, get what you got to say going. And then we could do a little speed round again, probably, because just a few things, because I just want your opinion on them. And
I'm just here now. That's what the rest of this episode is going to be me doing.
So you're going to drink beer now?
Oh my God, I'm gonna get so fucking hammered. I just like I'm just so reinvigorated about this show at all. I don't have any questions. I just want to gush a little bit, just because, like, I got so off my game. Like, I found out way too late that season three wasn't gonna come out last August. And so, like, all last year, the whole arc of my attitude and the podcast and everything was about season three coming out in August. And I don't think I found out. Justin, like, said something in June or July. He's like, it's not coming out in August or September. And it really just, like, I didn't want to watch it anymore. Like, I did want to watch it, but I was like, I wanted to watch it like this. I wanted to rewatch it with people and fans and watch the edit and prep for season three. And so when I realized I couldn't do that, I got really bummed, and I just put everything off. And now season three is coming. I've got a great excuse to rewatch them all. I have been rewatching them all. And your edits are a fantastic way to do that. And I really, you know, the show has its problems, but I like it, and I'm excited. And I'm so, so excited that we're so close to having more of it.
It's a good show for TV. It's not the groundbreaking TV show that the Wheel of Time books are to the fantasy genre. So it's not the same as the Game of Thrones TV show, for example. And, you know, as fans, I think we need to accept that Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, there's a reason they're held in such high regard, because they are the absolute top of the gold standard, right? And not everything can achieve those heights. We as fans, obviously very disappointed that that we are not the water cooler talk on a Monday morning in the office, right? But that's also a very unrealistic expectation. I do think the show is getting much better each season. And I'm hoping that season three really, really cuts down on these really long dialogues, you know, random side plots. There's a lot of people standing around talking at people. Like, I cannot stand those types of scenes. And you'll find that a lot of them have been cut out in the fan edit. So I'm hoping that there's enough plot. I mean, there's enough plot for season three, right? Book four is amazing. So I'm just hoping that there is a lot of, it doesn't have to be action all the time, but I want to just see progression. I want to see things happening to people and them reacting in a characterful way in a world.
There's a lot of important things that are happening at this timeline, at this point in the timeline in the books. And if that's where we're at in the timeline of the show, there's a lot of things that have to happen if they're going to move forward any further after this.
I absolutely pray that they just nail the delivery because we know what's coming.
Pretty good about it, dude.
So now I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Oh, Jeremy's here again. Great.
It would be, there has to be a lot of OG Wheel of Time fans that fucking love all the talking. The books are a lot. Like, I argue all the time with Jessa. I'm like, how many chapters are we going to have to read before we get to a goddamn battle? You know, and again, I'm with you, editor. Like, it doesn't have to be all fights, but if you're dealing with a show like this, where the whole point is the end battle, like from the first chapter to the end of the series, it's about good versus evil fighting it out. And so it's easy for me to assume that there's going to be a lot more little battles in between. And if you're a certain type of fan, this is perf. Like, Rafe might be like, eh, the fights are okay, but like, I love everyone talking and getting to know each other and where they're from and the clothes they wear and all that stuff.
I think the difference is that there's nothing wrong with dialogue scenes, but dialogue needs to inform character. It needs to inform world building. You can't hear me?
I can't hear Justin. Justin, hear you.
Sorry, I'm agreeing with you. Yes. Fucking yes.
Yeah.
And the challenge that I find with the dialogue that's the way it's written in this in the TV show is it's literally just there to move that one scene forward.
Yeah.
And it doesn't inform character and it doesn't inform world building and it doesn't inform plot to a greater extent. You need to have two or three layers of subtext going on. And I think the TV show's dialogue is all text and very little subtext. Yeah. And that's a problem.
And then when drop like subtext, it's mostly in the form of like small Easter eggs that only people like you and I who have read the books 100 times will get.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, oh, if someone points them out to someone who hasn't read them, they'll be like, I guess that's cool. Someone like us, we're like, yeah, that's cool. But you could have done all these things around it that would have made it hit a lot harder.
There's too much characters talking to each other for the sake of bringing the audience up to speed.
Especially characters that don't fucking matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a problem.
It's cool to have Perrin and Dane have a beer together, but also, do we fucking need it? No. We could have done some other shit right there, having Fael come in early, or just more like it was in the books when he...
I actually like that scene.
I don't hate it, but I love that scene, but... It's just another thing. It's like, I love it, but there are so many scenes that I don't love that are added that aren't necessary.
Yeah.
That being said, the 12 minutes that we get, like, first of all, I got someone who quit after the fourth episode of season one to watch the fan edit. I sent it to them. He watched the cold open and was like, okay.
He was like,
okay, I'm gonna watch the fan edit, and because I was telling him about it, I was like, if you watch the first season fan edit, I go look it up and tell me what you think. And I think as a book fan, I think you will like it. I think it will hit way better than what you didn't like about the first season. And so, like I said, I showed him the cold open. I showed him the first 4 minutes while we were working together. And he's like, all right, I can't do this right now. He's like, I'm going to watch this later. And so he texted me. He's like, fucking dope.
Nice. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. I love hearing feedback like that, honestly. Yeah. It's one of the things, like, especially like when you're making interesting choices, like which clip to use as the cold open and how to really set the scene for the... When you hear feedback like that, it's just amazing. Thanks so much.
Well, it's funny how much of a difference... Small thing. Yeah. I mean, like, it's not a small thing because it takes you a fuck ton of work. I get that. But as far as
a small decision,
just slide that to a different place or one line of dialogue, it's like I said, you cut out so much extraneous shit. I noticed so many more things, even just small one-liners, man. Yeah. It's just like, fuck
Am I correct in remembering that in both edits, you only used one cold open at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it comes back to it being a movie, right? A movie only has one cold open. So I couldn't and didn't want to insert others in between.
I just couldn't remember because I thought there might be a couple of cold opens that weren't flashbacks or you know, something that kind of served that episode.
You are correct. So season two, most of the cold opens were not flashbacks. So they were actually continuous parts of the story. So you're right. Actually, in season two, I've used almost, well, whatever cold opens were relevant and continuous.
Okay.
So, for example, the episode, now that you mentioned, the episode two cold open is literally about Rand waking up from his nightmare and then going to the asylum. You know, Lanfear comforts him, then he goes into the asylum. This is a continuous part of the story. So that's actually in the episode.
That's kind of weird that they didn't choose to make all the cold opens flashbacks.
Yeah,
I
think they really wanted to maximize the 1 hour runtime, so they got the extra 10 minutes.
Yeah,
they cut out the title sequence except for the very final episode, and
they
used the cold open time for in universe or in continuity scenes rather than flashbacks. So they gained themselves probably 15 minutes per episode.
Yeah,
and I still think a lot of it ended up still too much dialogue, still too much.
Well, it's like I think that extra 10 minutes was more like a cold closing. When I was rewatching it and I saw that episode, because I watched episode 1, 2, and 3, and then I had to hurry up and watch some today. So I skipped 4 and 5 and I just watched 6, 7, 8. And when 6 opens with Rand on the wheel, I'm just like, what? Like, you cliffhanged him going to sleep?
Your volume's on mute.
Sorry. Those are the things that I'm signing, dude. I'm practicing. God, you guys don't get it. So get it, Dad. God. I think those are the things that really made the difference in the non-episodic factor, where you put them and how you added them.
Exactly.
Rafe put them in a place that don't make sense. That does, oh my God, does not, not don't. The love of God. We have an educated man on this show with us, and I sound like a goddamn bumpkin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I cleaned up horse shit when I was a kid. Good times.
True story.
But I think those are the things that really are the biggest things that mattered to me. I saw those things. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like I didn't feel that way. Like what Des said, I didn't feel that way until I saw your cut. And I'm just like, yeah, because I watched a lot, like the last 5 episodes or 4 episodes last night. And I was just like, like seemed good, placement bad. And then it makes more sense with what you put around it. Right. So,
And that's the beauty of just destroying the sort of episodic boundaries that you work with. Right. You just, what makes the most sense? What's the best place to continue the scene and reach its conclusion and then move to the next scene? And then you just smoosh all the footage together and obviously make sure it's continuous and smooth. And I did that a lot.
And when you don't have, like, when there's things that you wish were on screen during your, you know, 8 hours of 8 episodes, and then you're cutting out things like all of Moraine's sister shit, which is dumb. You even have stuff that, example, Rand just kind of like, oh, I'm shielded by Swan, you know, and like literally just like there's no struggle. Like when Logan got shielded, he's like, you know, he's like, you could see him. They don't do anything with Matt. Rand is just like, okay, Dad, okay, Mom, like, okay, I'm grounded, fucking great. Like, you cut down around that, so it was way less annoying. It was like, okay, great, you know, he's shielded and he just is kind of like plotting, but like the long pathetic looks of him just being like,
I actually cut out the entire scenes of Swan in Kyrian in that room that's made up with the Amelin seat and all that.
Right, the fake Amelin seat.
And the reason again comes back to this topic of dialogue, right? Like she has the conversation with Moraine, and then she has the second conversation with Rand.
Right.
And it's all text and no subtext. Again.
Well, and a lot of it's like, dumb because it's spelling
out their plan for the sake of the audience. And then she's spelling out to Rand what his role is to be for the sake of the audience. And I don't know if you noticed. I'm actually very happy with what I've done here. I took that part where she's berating Rand. And she says to him, you are to be our greatest weapon, but not our general. Yeah?
Yes.
You know what the tower says about the dragon reborn? We are to cage him or control him and bring him out, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if you noticed. I took that entire dialogue and I squeezed it in as a voiceover into the scene where we are panning into the room where Rand's being held and Moraine is talking to him that he's been kept captive and he's been shielded.
I did notice that, but I also didn't notice that that wasn't originally how it was done.
That's not originally how it was done. Originally, so that dialogue is
and
in the room with
Swan and Moraine. Think about it.
Now move that dialogue as a voiceover into that little scene so that we get all of the exposition with none of the actual scene time.
And it's implying and that Moraine knows about this conversation as well.
And there was literally just enough dead air time to fit it all in. I had to cut every single word, close up the dead space the between words. Yeah, and just chunk them all one behind the other. And she manages to get out that whole sentence just in time for Moraine to zoom into the room where Rand is being held. And Rand says, "What's happening to me?" Just in time.
Right.
And then Moraine says, "You've been shielded."
But then it gives the impression that Moraine knows everything that's happening as well, right?
Exactly.
Like she's not there, but it gives the impression that she does know what's happening, whether she's watching the shadows or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. It's like the things that you did streamlined it to make you know that it's things that I didn't even know I was noticing.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, cool. Because I know the story so well. And part of the things that's helped me kind of differentiate is getting away from the books a little bit. Like I said, Game of Thrones and Harry Potter and a few other things to distance myself. Enjoying it much better, and I'm also noticing the things that you've done, changes or omissions or movements. That's like it makes things land better, and I think you deserve a job. So
thank you. there's a lot more of that in season two than in season one. Season one is a very straightforward edit as edits go. Season two, I really
when you said that, and I kind of forgot about it, and was like, okay, cool. And like I said, I wrote down things, and like, feel free to like shut me down if I'm wrong. You're like, I didn't do anything. Like the first when we came on, I'm like, did you change this? You're like, no. But did you change a lot? You're like, no.
What happens if you cut a lot of the extraneous stuff out, and you mentioned this, you actually notice the things that are left behind much more prominently.
Right, exactly. You don't get annoyed by like why or like. Not annoyed's not the right word. If I'm Jeremy, then I hate, but it's like, why are they doing this? And then you start kind of going off on a tangent to think like, why would they be doing this? Is there a reason? And is there something that they're trying to set up? So you start kind of going over and left to try to find a way around why they're doing this. And then you miss what's actually happening. So like I said, feel free to shut me down, but how fast Rand shut down, you closed that a lot, which made it less mopey and lame, I think. Is that correct?
So that whole scene is cut out, right? He's already in the prison room. He doesn't even go.
He's not just sitting there moping while they talk about him.
Exactly.
Like he's not there. That was
gone.
One of the things I noticed last night when I was watching the episodes. Yeah. I'm like, he's still in the fucking room, dude. Like he's just like they're talking like he doesn't even fucking exist. Like he's less than a fucking dog in the room. And I'm like, the Damani stuff. I feel like you cut a few of the like extra things out that are just like Damani's are slaves. Like we get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like. Yeah. I feel like it also makes it more poignant that they are slaves.
Absolutely. It comes back to this, you know, every episode is 1 hour long and every episode needs 3 beats per arc. And so there's a scene where Rena cuts Egwene's hair off. There's a scene where there's one or two additional scenes of Egwene and Rena in episode 6, but more 7 after Egwene's been broken, where it's like, okay, like, yeah, we've already established this. You're just adding this beat because you have to have 3 beats per episode. And so this one can go out because I'm smooshing all the content together. Yeah.
When you say beats, I feel like I kind of like, what do you mean? Like just like kind of like little
beginning,
plot,
middle, end. So every plot arc has 3 beats per 1 hour episode.
I know this weirdo.
Establishing shot.
Editing stuff, but.
Setup, resolution. Always. Okay. And it becomes... If you rewatch season two, it becomes jarringly obvious that every single person, every arc, has 3 beats per 1 hour episode. It's sometimes 2, sometimes 4, but like there's a definite arrive at a place, so set up, establish a conflict, and then resolve the thing to go into the next episode.
Well, and that's where Jesus, I'm losing all the words. The HBO show, the George R.R. Martin show.
Game of Thrones,
how they were able to, they got everybody so involved that they were able to leave characters out for 2 episodes just to make each episode a little bit more exciting and not force themselves to touch on everybody. And I understand why the Wheel of Time, you know, needs to at least check in on these four or five characters.
No, it's not.
Good night, Patty.
Well, I got more questions.
But if the Wheel of Time was able to come out every year and get in it and make people know that we're definitely going to get more Wheel of Time, then we would be a little bit more acceptable of a character missing from this episode or that episode, because we know we're going to be okay.
I mean, this is what I did with Matt, right? I took him out for 3 hours.
And we didn't miss him that much because they didn't do anything that great with him fucking anyway.
They made him feel more miserable, right? And like, you don't need the misery to get the redemption at the end, per se.
Yeah. It almost makes it hit harder not knowing where he is. And then he just pops up. And you're like, oh, you went back. You went back for the dagger. That's all you need to know. You went back
to the dagger. Let him be the gambler, right? The trickster. The first time you see him 3 hours in, he's rolling dice and Rand comes across.
Yep. And that pisses me off that they don't say that. He goes, I fought beside you many times. Just put gambler in after that.
Exactly. Time to insert another word there. I'll need to figure it out.
And that's also something that, like, it's really easy for us to be frustrated with, but that was partially them coming back from something they couldn't control, you know, COVID, actor leaves, you know, and
new actor's great, by the way.
They did a shitty job.
I love Donald Finn. Like, I love Donald Finn. I love Barney after watching your cut. I love Barney, but Donald Finn's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, sorry. It's okay.
You had more questions, Betty.
You have $10 million worth of writers and producers and historians. You can do better.
Okay. Speed round, because we're getting close to the end of it. I know, did you cut down Rima's little like dance with Basan, or did I just have to like, did I miss that part in one of the like?
So interesting.
Why didn't they just block her also?
But I'll talk about Rima and Basan, and I'll talk about Ingtar. And the Sean Chan.
I'll take your answer off the air.
So in the battle of Rima and Basam, there are three or four cutaways to Nynaeve and Elaine watching the battle. And I took all of that out except for one, which I couldn't because of a continuity, like I couldn't match the continuity of the shot before and after. So I needed a break in between. But essentially, I focused all the scenes on just Rima and Basam and the Sean Chan that they're busy fighting. So it feels a lot more dynamic. You are in their perspective all the time. You're not cutting away to Elaine and Nynaeve watching them and Elaine trying to silence Nynaeve from making a noise, like all of those things. And honestly, it feels a lot more visceral this way, right?
Did you take out the part where they're face-to-face? Because I missed that. That was one of the main things.
No. I might have taken out some shots of them to make it go a little bit faster, but I mostly took out the shots of the cutaways back to Nynaeve and Elaine. The same thing I did with the Ingtar battle. When Ingtar sacrifices himself and he says, you know, one man could hold 50 here, and then he jumps in and da-da-da-da. There are three or four times where they cut away to Perrin, to Massima, watching him fight the guys. I cut all of that out and just focused on him. And it's bloody intense. It's like he is mowing those guys down. There are no cutaways. Yeah. Right? He's really like one man holding 50. You really feel that he could do it. And then he gets
the cutaways make me miss that, because I only remember in my head until I watch your cut is him going, Shinawa. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And like you said,
the cutaways feel very discontinuous, and it doesn't feel like he's taking them all down. When you don't cut away, he's like massacring those guys. He's absolutely killing them.
I did the same thing at the end.
Yeah. I did the same thing for season 1, episode 1, Winter Night. If you do, like, literally, I love watching that battle. Not to do my own horn, but I love the way I cut it. You can literally just stand there with a pencil and paper and do a body count for how many Trollocs Lan cuts down behind Moraine. He's just in the background there, massacring.
I counted 19.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm way off, dude.
He was absolutely a machine. And you don't get that from the episode when you watch it. It's just there's too many
cutaways. And that's what a warder does, dude. Like,
exactly. The killing machine.
Reading the books, like, you know, like they can literally just be like, get down like that. And nobody else does.
One thing that was really, really challenging, except for the Blood Snow, all the other battles in the entire 2 seasons are very badly edited. Shot and edited.
They're dark.
They're dark, but they also use too many angles. They don't stay with the action, so the continuity is edited into smithereens.
Well, because no one was allowed to touch each other.
For the COVID one, for season one, that's fine. But for season two, even the Fade fights, right? There's no nice open... Even, by the way, again, Avienda and Perrin versus versus the White Cloaks. There's a lot of cutting.
Oh.
Like, you could stay with Avienda the way you stayed with Shael in the Blood Snow. It would have been that much more powerful to actually just see one continuous take. We should just
If you just instead cut that same amount of time into what Perrin was doing and what she was doing, and while you do Perrin's, you can see her doing what she was doing in the background, exactly. So you know it's happening at the same time. Absolutely, I agree.
I do think they need a better choreographer and action.
That seems much more staged.
Like, someone who knows how to shoot action. Like, they need an action director more than, you know, they have the episode director do their thing, but then call someone else in for the action, because the blocking, the choreography, the editing is not
for the great. Physical fighting, for the magic, I want to talk about that at the end, I think is amazing, especially looking at the cold open. I have not seen magic like that done on screen.
Yeah.
I don't watch tons of stuff, but tell me something that has been done in a way where they're like throwing the air blades and the, you know, like besides like the boys effects, which is not magic.
Yeah.
Show me magic like that. That's coming out of people's hands. It's not just fire or something, you know, pedestrian that we've seen a million times.
Yeah.
I mean, can either one of you guys name one?
Visually a huge step up, right? The season three cold open is.
I think so. But is there any other show you can think of that has done stuff like that? I'm sure there's some, but like
outside of Marvel, not really, right? Like, but then you took
right. That's like Red Witch stuff, dude. To me, and like you know, it's not red. It looks like you saw it in your head canonically when you read the books.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just block Rima? That's just a question.
I don't know.
She was able to just. I mean, that was admittedly a fucking.
It works for TV, right? Like, let's not. Right. I mean, even in the books, right? Like, why didn't they communicate more effectively? Like, there's certain blatantly obvious things that you just have to accept, right?
Except, right?
Even, by the way,
like they could have shown them trying to block her breaking it and then doing it, because it was like they just stood there and like, what are you going to do, Damani? And she's like, I'm going to fucking break all your bones.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of them walking into a square and then stopping to pose a little bit. Like, it's a bit Western. Even in the season three cold open, right? That final seconds of the thing, Alana and her warders walk into the square and then these guys have a face off. Like, why would you even pause? You'd immediately just start fighting, right?
It's like the Bond villain explaining everything that he's going to do to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Escaping,
you know, it's like a TV trope, right? So you allow it.
But, yeah. Okay. All right. That's fair. I just want to say also the White Cloaks showing up in Falm is definitely kind of reminiscent of Stannis showing up beyond the wall, but lamer and more racist somehow. What else did I notice? Just your matte cuts, like you said, you cut it down a lot. And I think, did you cut the tea scene down at all? Did you cut anything out of that? I feel like it was all
the tea.
He cut the fuck out of that.
The whole thing. The
shorter, no, but tea. It still had all the visions.
Right? There's no tea. There's no tea in the movie at all. Oh. I cut the whole scene out. I didn't like it.
I was watching the fucking thing last night, and then it must have been one of the spots that I had to. Push. So does he just show up with Flanfear? Do you see him getting knocked out at all, or is it just
yes? So so this is very cool.
That must have been one of the parts that I missed. So hit me.
So this is very cool. Rand meets Lan in Kyrian. They have their reunion. They sit and talk about going, and Matt says, I'm coming with you, da da da.
Mm-hmm.
Then I cut, and this is where I move scenes out of order. Because Min isn't in the movie, there is no scene where Matt goes to see Min, and Min tells him not to go with Rand. So in the movie...
Oh, that's right, because you're going to kill him. That's right.
Matt doesn't abandon Rand in the movie. What happens is, I bring the scene forward where Matt gets knocked out. So Matt goes off away from Rand and says, we'll meet back in an hour. Goes and gets himself knocked out. Then you cut back to Rand, who's waiting, and Matt doesn't pitch up. But you know that Matt's been knocked out. Then he leaves, right?
Cheers, thank you, sir. Beautiful.
Cheers.
Mm-mm.
And then, nice.
So well
and then
done.
Basically, yeah, Rand really goes off. And then you come back to Matt waking up in Falm with Lanfear in a later scene.
Fuck yeah.
So that's again, you know, it's these things that you do to try and think of what's a better motivator.
Knock that out.
What's a better motivator for, well, one of Lanfear's goons, right? Because she's the one who brought him to Falm.
Okay.
But what's a better motivator? So I've cut Min out. So what's the stronger way now in the movie to get Matt or get Rand to have to go without Matt? And then you think to yourself, hang on, Matt gets knocked out. Why didn't I move that scene forward? And
yeah, that's he gets kidnapped. He doesn't diss him on purpose.
He no longer abandons Rand. You know, he's not someone who's, you know, who's... And Min is not a dark friend. Min's not even in the movie. Matt doesn't abandon
Rand. And it brings Matt's character up, too.
It brings Matt's character up. And in the, ultimately, in the end, he obviously does the right thing by trying to help his friend. By throwing him with a spear, yeah. But okay. You know.
by fucking stabbing him in the fucking... one of the Matt always gets one or two good lines. Is this a sex thing? What is two?
2 minutes.
What? 2 minutes?
Fuck you, 2 minutes. We don't. Okay. All right.
I still haven't released last week's. I've had a fucking busy week. And so I want to get, I'm almost done.
If you want me to finish or what?
I know.
I fucking, Desmond hasn't said shit. Just the sex thing, murder thing. Either way, can we run this up?
We got a few minutes.
Also, cut down. I got you. We need to taper off. You cutting down Egwene, holding off fucking Ishmael for like 45
yes.
minutes.
Yes.
So cutting anything, down all of Perrin's Captain America's shield moments. Thank you very much.
So funny thing, if I can jump in here, I didn't cut down any of the Egwene fighting Ishmael scenes. What I did was I put the two scenes back to back.
You didn't shorten them?
I didn't shorten them. I merged the two back to back because the way it's done in the show is she fights him, she holds him off. It cuts away to, I don't even know what it cuts away
Nine
to.
It cuts away to Nynaeve. She's
off on the boats and it cuts away to Nynaeve.
It cuts to Nynaeve and Elaine 14 times with Nynaeve taking a shit and Elaine having an arrow in her leg.
So all I did was I put literally those two scenes back to back. So it feels like she's holding him off for like a single minute. And that seems more realistic to me, number one.
Damn, I'm getting the impression that it took a long time just from the cutaways and you just pushed them together and that made that much of a difference.
Yes.
So, sorry to interrupt.
I mean, this is editing 101, right? You cut away in order to give the audience the impression that things are happening off screen. And then when you cut back to them, they think the elapsed time is equal to the amount of time that it took.
It's blowing my fucking mind right now. Des gets it. This is blowing my fucking mind.
So what ends up happening is if you put them back to back and you cut out the part of Suras shielding Rand and then Moraine blowing up the ships and then unshielding Rand and all of that, like all of that's out. You're just on the tower with the group. Egwene's holding the guy off. She doesn't last very long, not even 30 seconds in this version because it's all cut back to back, right?
Seems like it's hours.
Fighting him, you get to the next scene where she turns around to Rand and is like apologizing because she can't hold him off. Perrin jumps in immediately with a shield. Nynaeve and Elaine are there. If one of the big themes of the season is the importance of teamwork, and this is established in episode 1, where Nynaeve is reading Perrin's letter to Egwene, where she says the Shannarans have a saying that if you're one man alone with a shield, you're still exposed, but if you're together and all of you have your shields, then you're protected from all sides. Right? That's the theme of the season, established in episode 1 and paid off in episode 8 in the finale.
Yeah.
If you cut out all of the extraneous stuff, Surath on the ships and Elaine and Nynaeve with the arrow in a knee and all of this stuff, right?
You got that
And you just focus on the tower. Then Egwene's holding him off for about 30 seconds. Perrin jumps in to help. Nynaeve and Elaine are immediately there to heal Rand. Matt is there to kind of apologize and to help and so on. Rand gets healed. He hasn't been shielded. He gets healed. He stands up. He walks over to Ishmael. He kills him. It's like a visual, like it's the strongest possible way to show the power of teamwork is to focus on them getting together as a team as quickly as possible. And once they are together as a team, they can defeat the guy, right? Not these cutaways to this and that while it's all happening. Just get the theme of the season that you've established in episode 1, resolve it in episode 8, and do the thing.
Definitely. So,
yeah.
I'm still going speed. Don't you dare cut me off. As far as did you cut Hopper's death out?
No, it's there.
Okay, so it was one of those spots that I couldn't watch apparently. So which is not, this does not make me that sad because I watched it last night on the show and I cried. Don't judge me.
No, you're heartless if you don't.
How do you feel about Elaine healing Rand? I feel like it's one of those things, it's a TV show. Nynaeve were to just heal him the way she did in the cave, he'd be perfectly healed forever and you wouldn't have the lingering wound.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
I mean, it is what it is. And I think they establish it well when Nynaeve is unable to heal Elaine's arrow thing. And she says, you know, you've got to come with me because when I'm up there, I might not be able to help. So Elaine has to be the one that does the healing, imperfectly as it is. I did cut out the shot where she's lit behind with a golden ray of sun and Rand is like...
Yeah, I noticed. I did notice that.
That was very phony. It's...
No, that's a lot of the things that I did notice that you cut. It's like there were enough, there was like one like super cheesy thing, I think, probably every episode. I just kind of went like, even the cold open, Alana, let us in. You guys are warders. You would be like breaking your body trying to get that down, and you would accept
any instead of politely knocking on the door, right?
Yeah, hey, let us in, bro. Like, it's like, that's just crazy.
I'm already picturing where to like snip that cold open.
Cut that out. Alana, yeah, one, boom. Yeah. and then boom, it blows up.
Yeah,
that would be a good spot. But
you could get them approaching the door and then it blowing up in their face and then just showing,
or even just like Alana, and then you know.
Yeah,
that was pretty sick how the Red Sister just ices homegirls' warders, like pops their heads. Anyways, that's for next week. Little teaser. Okay, Dez, I'm sorry, I feel your eyes. First of all, the book art at the end, that was fucking awesome. Our boy Lorne nailed his predictions on the cold open as far as like where it was going to land and stuff.
Yeah.
Unraveling the pattern. If anybody listened to us, it's a plug. Trust me. I just want to mention
the best Wheel of Time content creator. He launched
hands down. I mean, I love.
He released another video yesterday or today, your time, I suppose, this morning.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, and I love John from What Up. Dude's awesome. He usually has a lot of scoops. Lorne doesn't get as many scopes, but his breakdowns and his prediction stuff, like even if they're not right, are so entertaining, and he finds so much stuff to back it up that their videos themselves.
Production quality is through the roof as well, right? Like, it's insane.
As well. But the videos themselves, just absolutely fucking entertaining. You will get lost in them. You're like, fuck, if you're a Wheel of Time person and the lore and everything, it's
absolutely
great. Everything else is just talking about next week. Do you think Shiriam is compulsed about the confusion, or is she playing dumb on purpose, if you catch my meaning?
It's such a weird, such a strange way to do it in the TV show, because it doesn't, it's neither here nor there. Like, I don't know that the way that they established it in the TV show, that it actually matters whether or not she was compulsed or whether she was actually doing it herself. Because what difference does it make in the TV show?
Well,
like, what difference does that make of her writing that in the notebook, if she was compulsed or if she wasn't compulsed? If she was just
Taking a hand on purpose. Because either way, she's pretending like she doesn't get it to cover her mask. So what is it?
I think the only reason that exists is not because of the compulsion. It's so that Viren can say that line to what's her name? I forget the sister's name, the one from Harry Potter.
Joe.
Yeah, Joe. It's so that she could say that line, so that the next line could say, oh, but that means the Black Lodger is real. I think that's the only reason that they put that in. And again, it's one of those things where
just moving that scene forward,
deliberately handholding the audience to, like, they need to reach the Black Lodger line. So they need to put a line in about compulsion. But the actual compulsion in that scene is like irrelevant. Like, either Shiriam is a Black Lodger herself, or she's being compulsed to write it, but it doesn't make a difference. Like, that distinction doesn't make a difference. By the way, I did take out one line that I saw some content creators reacting to, where Cho was saying, thanks to my eidetic memory, you know, I remember exactly how it was written. And the term eidetic memory is a very modern language, like it's
term,
it's,
yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good.
Pretty modern medical term type of thing, you know.
You wouldn't say photograph.
I actually just cut out that line, and I just start the dialogue with a different. I even used a different part of the shot where they're panning over them as they're reading the letter or something, and it just starts with that's the.
Hilarious, actually.
As you can see here, she's written it this way, and later on the writing changes. You know,
that's fucking great.
Small things that I noticed annoyed other people, and some annoyed myself. I just quick. Dialogue cuts. They are very, very. There's a one very subtle thing that you won't have noticed, but I want to mention it. When Lanfear and Ishamael are in the dream world and they're discussing the people, you know, that, you know, the good guys essentially, and they're going through the list, right? They talk about Nynaeve and Egwene, and they say, you know, one is afraid of a power and the other one doesn't even know how to access it. And then they talk about the boys, and he says something like, you know, Matt was born mine, and Perrin will soon be more wolf than man.
Yeah, yeah.
There is, and I absolutely don't know why they do this. They refer to Moraine by name, and they refer to the boys by name. It's not good writing to refer to you. Like, you're putting your enemies on the same stature as you. The amount of time that Lanfear talks about Moraine by first name is, it fucks with me, because she should say that Aes Sedai, or, you know, that nuisance, or whatever.
Pathetic excuse for an Aes Sedai.
The so-called Aes Sedai of this age, or something like that.
The Blue Menace.
Yeah.
The shepherd.
If you refer to someone by name, you bring their stature up to your level, number one. Or in the opposite direction, it can also diminish. Like, I just don't think it should be written in the way that they're mentioning them by first name, right?
It should because be much they more should, of a throwaway.
They should treat them with disdain, right? So what I did,
absolutely.
I couldn't change the naming of Moraine because it's on screen. She's saying it. There's no way to fudge it. With Ishmael mentioning Matt and Perrin by name, I've snipped the dialogue very tightly, and I even overlaid one small piece, one word from somewhere else in there. So now he says, one was born mine, referring to Matt, and the other will soon be more wolf than man. And it just sounds a lot more dramatic than to say Matt was born mine and Perrin will soon be more. Like, why is he calling them by first name? It just doesn't make sense. And if you, even in the books, right, when there was three Taviren, you always talked about these three figurines, right?
Yeah, always.
One with a sword.
Always.
And it was always those three figurines, those three figures, those three boys, those three whatever. It
For
was
a long
never
time,
Matt
they didn't know
and
which
Perrin.
One was going to be the dragon, right?
Exactly. And it was always some, there's a sense of mystery around referring to them as third person. So I just like little tiny one word edits is the length I've gone to in this season versus last season. And I'm happy with these types of little things that I've done.
I think it makes all the difference in the world.
One thing that won't make me sad is if Nynaeve and Egwene turn out to be just as Tarviren as the boys.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, that's already established in the show. But one thing they need to establish in the books is exactly what in the show is exactly what Tarviren actually means, because they've mentioned it now a couple of times, and there's no focal points for the wheel. What does that mean?
One time where they say something about bending, the pattern will weave itself around them for a time, and it's
and
like
you know
it's,
what
it's
what disappoints me is that they had the scene in season one where Loial meets Rand in the library. They had all the time in the world to explain Tavirin through Loial's perspective, and they didn't take it. Some of the writing choices they make to deviate from the books make sense, and some of the writing choices they make is just like, why wouldn't you just take it from the books and adapt it for the show? Like, why would you discard such world building, such intrigue, such?
There's so much stuff with a couple of tweaks could have been set up that so they didn't need to make such.
And mostly in the dialogue writing. It's mostly in the dialogue writing. They could have made it so much more interesting. I'm very, like, the most frustrating thing of this, of the TV show is the dialogue for me.
Is it just poor writing? Is it something else they're trying to achieve? You know, is
in my
he just
opinion,
trying to make his own stand or what?
It's poor writing. It's text versus having subtext to the text, right? So they write text, but they don't include two or three layers of subtext behind the text at every given moment. And I think good writers can achieve that.
Yeah. And that's how you have stories that are well-rounded, even if you don't have enough time on screen to get everything in that you want to get in.
Desmond, I mean, how much of House of the Dragon is two people talking to each other?
Yeah, exactly.
How much of House of the Dragon is two people talking to each other? But how does that feel? Like, it's politically, like, it's charged. Anyway.
Yep.
This is, this is killing a good sphere. He's about to close us down.
Des is, that's it. What is it in Gross Point Blank? She says, my guest is taking his headphones off, and that is usually the signaling of the end of the interview. So.
I just want you to know that I was still listening. I just wanted to listen through my speakers.
It's all good. We got to wrap it up. That's pretty much all I got. Otherwise, we're going to start running into next week and season three. The last thing is, pisses me off that Lanfear appears to be afraid of Mogadin. And if you can shed any light on that from an editing point of view, please do.
She's afraid for Rand because she knows Mogadin won't.
And she's caught off guard, I suppose.
And she's caught off guard, so she's trapped in that spiderweb thing. So obviously she's like, shit. I just walked straight into it.
Because she's shocked right there because all of the seals are broken as well. Because that's one thing I actually completely forgot because of the way of being cut, but noticed it because you cut it down. Is she has just a second before you see Mogadin to see all the seals broken. And she's like, oh fuck.
Yep.
And then boom, then Mogadin's there. So she's kind of, it's kind of twofold, I suppose, that she's shocked, she's caught off guard. And she's probably, at the very least trapped physically and possibly somewhat shielded if Mogadin cut her up that far off guard. Yep. So I don't know.
Exactly.
Okay.
I was definitely like the last time I saw that stinger, I was exhausted from watching, all season long. And this is the first time I really understand the first time that Lanfear was running in there to just or not destroy him, but to make sure that they didn't get out.
Going to take him, right?
He was going to go take him and give him to Bale Doman, right? She said.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which kind of smacks up the sad bracelets that he was supposed to toss at the bottom of the ocean, right?
Yeah.
In the books?
Yeah. Well, it's in the cold open, right? In the...
God, I got to watch that closer. I still haven't
You need to go into the 13th Depository and pause on every... Well, Lauren's done it for you, right? So just go watch his video.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm going to do...
Sorry.
I was going to say, I'm going to do a lot of watching that stuff in this next week.
One of the stills that we saw was that seemingly male statue with the blonde lady with the baby underneath it. I think that's Leandrin, and I think that's a male channeler in the sad bracelets. It has the same sunburst on it as the sad bracelets in the 13th Depository. Tune in next week for more gems like that.
Definitely. And next week, I won't be in such a hurry to get off. Obviously, we're not going to go for hours and hours and hours, but...
7 hours next week.
So I wanted to keep this one a little bit tight, so we had plenty to talk about next week, which I know also isn't going to be a problem. But everyone out there, if you're listening to this, please, please, please join us next week. We are going to be live 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The editor is going to be here. Jeremy's going to be here. Get your predictions in. If you don't get your bets in by next week at 9 p.m., then it doesn't count. I don't want to hear, I knew it, I told you so. Nope.
Yeah, I don't want to hear Eagles were going to smack the Chiefs in the Super Bowl by 30 in a year. That doesn't count.
Doesn't count. Hear it
now, just so you guys can see, prediction already.
Oh, that's
your season 3 predictions.
I'm going to refine them a little bit, but I'm going to watch a couple more videos. I got a few things. My biggest one so far is the Atlanta bonding.
He's not.
Yep. It's not Rand. It's not Rand.
Oh, interesting.
So,
Justin,
I'm done.
What?
Don't lie to me.
About what?
Just don't lie. Just don't lie. It's okay to be who you are. You're not refining anything for next week. You're gonna blow those predictions out. You know what I want you to do?
Don't lie to me. Okay.
I want you to type all of those predictions into ChatGPT and see what comes out.
Do I have to download like an app or something for that, or can I just go on?
No, just go to ChatGPT.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw.
What do you mean? So what? Just like what do I do? Just like read my predictions into it, or type them, or what?
I don't know.
Ask ChatGPT what its predictions are for Wheel of Time. Yeah, let me just do it quickly. I've got it.
Oh, okay.
We had.
He's like, I'll just do it right now.
I saw the best use of ChatGPT ever. I had a parent of my son's soccer team put in playoff scenarios.
You were telling me that one. That's
for a 9-year-old soccer, and it was just
the one you sent me to me and Jeremy. Is it? It was like, I don't know. It called me some name. I'm like, I'm that forever now.
Oh yeah, what was it?
It was saying that Jeremy was like, Jeremy says he likes the show. It's like, it's right here.
That's my software, my AI software that I pump our episodes into, and then
it
pumps out episode show notes.
All
right,
and chapter
synopsis month. Or whatever.
Nice. Yeah,
awesome. Well, I'm super looking forward to next week. No, whiskey down. Son of a bitch.
All right, the editor is going to leave us with a stinger about AI's predictions for season 3.
Yeah, it's a bit hit and miss. Sorry to disappoint you guys. So it's made 6 major predictions.
Okay.
Number one, Meridian and the Aiel arc. And it's already got it wrong, right? It says Rand, Matt, and Moraine, maybe Lan will journey to the Aiel ways. We know Matt is not going. Well, so Matt's this is basically going. Useless. I think ChatGPT is more of a book fan than a show fan.
Oh, call the book cloaks. Call the white cloaks.
Yeah. Okay, number 2, Battle of the Two Rivers. Nothing surprising here.
Yeah.
Number 3, The Stone of Tyr, Aftermath, and Rand versus the Forsaken. Again, no. We're not going to Tyr this season. Number 4, Egwene and the Wise Ones. That's fine. We know that's going to happen.
Very vague, very vague.
More Forsaken and the Shadows moves. Lanfear, Mogideon, Asmodian, and possibly Grendel or Demondred. I think those are fair predictions. Baden Fane's role will expand. I doubt it. We'll see more Black.
What was that? What's expanded?
Baden Fane's role. I don't think
I fucking wish. That was what my coworker, who I did convince to watch season 3, was like, I really hope they do more with Baden Fane because he was such an interesting character in the books.
Yeah, I think they don't know how to bring all that book stuff into the show. It gets very out there in the end. Right?
Yeah, it does. It does. That's fair.
All right. We will see. Oh, do you have any more predictions?
I thought it was the last one.
Do you have any more predictions?
No, that's it.
Okay. All right, everybody. We will see you next week. And just remember, this is your home.
Cheers, guys. Chat next week. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again, brother. I can't wait. Have a great night. May you always find water and shade. Love you guys.
Love you guys.
All right. Bye.
Oh. And leave your lap. Yep. Yeah.
You're not even my real dad. Don't tell me what to do. See you guys. Love you, brother.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
And this is where the hilarious outtake would appear.